Speaking of Sam Bailey, Niall Hatch is with Sam Bailey now. We can say hello to him. Hello, Niall. How are you?
Hi, Derek. Hi, Eric. How are you both doing?
Yeah, hello, nice Niall. To be here. How are you? Nice to talk to you again.
Likewise, Eric. I know that for both you and I, the cuckoo is a bird that's very dear to our hearts. But we both live on the Wicklow coast, and unfortunately, we don't get to hear them that much where we live.
No, unfortunately not. And I was very lucky in that last year, a bird was passing through, and it actually stopped off in our garden. It was present for about an hour around our garden calling and then moved off inland. So it was an extraordinary bird for me to see in the garden. I just couldn't believe it. I remember years ago being up in the Wicklow Mountains, the Dublin Mountains. There were cuckoos everywhere. They are getting so scarce now. It's a species I just adore. They're such special birds.
Absolutely. I fully agree with you there, Eric. And I think it's really important that we find what's happening to them, why they're declining and where they're going. So I'm delighted to be here in Cork once again with Sam Bailey of the National Parks and Wildlife Service and formerly a colleague of mine in Birdwatch Ireland. I was speaking to Sam recently about the choughs, of course, for Chough Watch. And now I'm talking to him about, another species that begins with C. That's the cuckoo. Sam, tell us about what you and NPWS have been doing in relation to cuckoos.
So last year, in May last year, we had a pilot project to start satellite tracking cuckoos in Ireland in conjunction with the British Trust for Ornithology.
And up until now, when people have asked me, and I'm often asked, where do our cuckoos go for the winter and how do they get there? I've really just had to make an educated guess, or actually maybe even not that educated, because we know surprisingly little. I know that you're a very experienced bird ringer, but the traditional ringing method of putting that metal band on the leg of the bird, when it comes to cuckoos, that hasn't really been terribly successful, at least hasn't given us too much information on where they go.
Yeah, I mean, for some species, it's brilliant and it gives us a wealth of information. And even, even with cuckoos, it can tell us a lot if we, sort of recatching them back here in Ireland each year, potentially. But for where they go outside of here, that's not very helpful at all. In fact, there's in the whole history of ringing in Britain and Ireland, there's only been one recovery of a cuckoo in Africa, and that was in something like 1938 in the Cameroon, and it was where someone had harvested a cuckoo for their lunch. So, we didn't know anything other than that. Until about 10 years ago, the BTO started doing some British cuckoos, started tagging some British cuckoos and finding out where they were going. And there's some really interesting information from that, which was coming through from that. And I thought, right, we've got to get in on this. We've got to find out what's going on with our Irish cuckoos and see if there's a similar picture to what's happening in Britain or if it's something completely different.
You mentioned tagging there. So these are different to the legs, the leg rings that often go on birds. What's a cuckoo tag like and how does it operate?
Yeah. So a satellite tag for a cuckoo is currently it's about 5 grams. So it's a really, really light, nifty piece of gear with a little aerial off the back of it.
And it's important to keep the weight down, of course.
Obviously. Yeah. So it's really, really important for welfare of the bird, so that makes sure that it does what it's supposed to do, so it doesn't infringe on any of the bird's activities. Obviously, birds, they have a lot of times where they put a lot of weight on and take a lot of weight off depending on migration and things like that, so their weight fluctuations can be quite massive.
So 5 grams is nothing.
It's nothing for a cuckoo. 5 grams, and that 5 gram tag has got a little solar panel on the back of it.
Wow.
So which keeps the battery charged up, because a little battery, and then it sends signal up to a satellite, and then that satellite beams it back down to us and we can find out exactly where they are. And there's various other things on that tag, like temperature. So it gives us, the temperature can give us a bit of idea of the health of the bird. Okay. If it starts to show a really cold temperature and the track isn't moving anywhere, that's starting to tell us a picture that potentially that might not be doing very well.
And I understand that was the case with one of the Irish birds that was tagged. Because if you bring us through that, I think there were 4 in total that were tagged in Ireland last year?
That's right. So we tagged 4. There was one that we tagged in the Burren National Park and 3 that we tagged in Killarney National Park. And that one in the Burren, Carron, unfortunately, he lasted no more than a month, and the tag went quiet, and we could see from the temperature gauge that it dropped quite significantly down, and that's usually a very good indicator that it was not just the tag failing, it was actually a problem with the bird. So, that gave it away for us.
So, unfortunately for the bird from County Clare, it didn't work, but the ones that came from the Kingdom, the other 3, they've done a lot better.
yeah, they did really, really well. All 3 were tagged in the same location on the same morning, which was quite phenomenal to catch them all at once. Whereas originally we were only thinking of trying to do two in Killarney and two in the Burren. But, you know, you take what you get with this, you know, so that's how nature works. So we did the three in Killarney, and all three of them, I mean, we tagged them on the 17th of May. And by the 3rd of June, the first one was already migrating away.
Wow.
Already started migrating. So, and the last one of those three to start migrating was at the end of June, 26th, I believe. And it started migrating off then.
So they leave pretty quickly, at least the males do. And these are all male cuckoos.
That's right. These are all male cuckoos, yeah. So females are quite a bit smaller than males. So this 5 gram tag, you know, we're just a bit unsure about whether it's suitable for the weight, you know, to make sure that it affects. So we haven't been tagging female cuckoos as part of any of these projects. So at the moment, it's just focused on the males.
Out of interest, how does one catch a cuckoo? Is it difficult?
It's not straightforward. You have to, yeah, they're very, you know, they're fairly intelligent birds. So we generally, you set up a triangle of nets around a suitable bush or tree or something that's not too high.
These mist nets,
very fine mist nets before dawn. So you need to be up, you know, sort of really, really early. I think we were about 4:30 in the morning. We had to be everything set up by some awful hour that we started. But and then we set up a decoy, so a fake female cuckoo, sort of in the middle of these nets, and then we play the call. Now, obviously, this is all under license, and very important to say that, you know, you can't just go out and catch a cuckoo. This was all done under proper licensing so that we could do this. And then once we caught the birds, so they can be quite active before it gets light, as well as, you know, sort of in daylight. So we actually were catching them just before it got light, and it makes it even harder for them to see the nets, you see. So and then we applied the tag and let them go.
Now, what those tags were showing was really remarkable. I was keeping track of it constantly on the website. You can access it there now through MPWS's website and also through the BTO website. There were so many surprises for me, because I always assumed that those birds in the west of Ireland, I knew that they would spend the winter in sub-Saharan Africa. So it's stood to reason that they would probably move through maybe southern Britain, maybe go direct to France, or maybe even just go down to Spain directly and head across the Straits of Gibraltar, through Morocco, across the Sahara Desert, which of course is the big obstacle for them, and then down to sub-Saharan Africa. I would have been wrong.
Yeah, well, exactly. I had this thing, maybe they're going to do something different than the British ones. And to begin with, they actually stuck to pretty much the same as what a lot of the British ones do. I mean, although they're like the most westerly of the species anywhere in the world, they headed almost the most easterly compared to a lot of the British ones. So they first went down to Italy, to the northern Italy, where two of them actually spent most, you know, sort of a big time, whereas the third one went right there across to Bosnia and Herzegovina.
Wow, it's in the Balkans.
So went a lot further east. And so what they do when they arrive in that sort of south European area, they then do a massive big feed. So these birds, they need to take on a lot of fat, build up their muscles for big journeys. So they do a lot of small jumps, get down to that area, and then they do a massive big feed. And in the past, for a lot of the British birds, the Po Valley, sort of in northern Italy, has been a really important staging post. But some have gone a bit further east, some have gone a bit further west. But, you know, so two of our birds also went to the Po Valley, whereas one went a bit further. And they were there for about 8 weeks, just gorging themselves, absolutely feeding on, putting on lots of fat. And these are quite special birds because they generally only feed on hairy caterpillars. Certainly in our area, so once you get down to the Amazon, to Africa, you know, so the rainforest in Africa, they will eat other insects and stuff as well, but they're generally, hairy caterpillars is their big thing.
So presumably then they're very susceptible to things like agricultural intensification, climate change, pollution, all of these things hitting them.
Yeah, very much, very much. So if you remember last spring, summer, it was really hot. We had a really hot sort of April, May, and in southern Europe was absolutely blistering. It was just like, you know, everything was just dry and fires and things, and that had a really big impact on some of the cuckoos. They tagged some cuckoos in Britain last year, and when they're on their northbound migration back to Europe, they landed in Spain, and it was so dry there was nothing for them to eat. There was no vegetation, there was no caterpillars to eat, and a couple of them ended up dying. So it has a real big impact potentially on what's happening.
They really need to make sure they have enough reserves to cross that Sahara Desert. It really is such an unforgiving habitat. There's nothing for them to eat or drink when they're there. Mm. And if they're not at the actual peak of fitness to make that crossing, they might not be able to, and they may then go to plan B. And that's actually what happened to one of the Killarney cuckoos, I understand.
Yeah, so it was really interesting. So one of our cuckoos did something completely, at first we were like, what is he doing? Because he went to the Po Valley, did his 8 weeks there, standard normal stuff, and then he started to come back northwest, headed back towards Ireland, and went back towards the Loire. Was there for about a week. Then it flew across to Switzerland, the Swiss border, spent a little bit of time there before then just crossing back down to near Bordeaux. And we're like, what is going on with this bird? It's doing something really. That 8 weeks, all the others were disappearing off south over the Sahara, whereas he was milling around in France. We didn't know quite what was happening. I spoke to my colleagues at BTO, and they said that they've seen this before, and usually this is a really bad sign. Usually what it means is it just did not find enough food in its first choice of location that it's trying to find somewhere else to then do the feeding up. And so it ended up down near Bordeaux, and was doing was there for about another 8 weeks. And we were really starting, it was getting late. It was getting late in the year. We were really sort of like, is he going to make it? Is he going to do it? A lot of the other ones, when they do this, they just don't survive. They don't get it. But then suddenly, over like a four-day period, shot from there straight down across the Sahara. It was a little bit late getting down there amongst the others. It was about a couple of months later than the others finally reaching Democratic Republic of Congo. But he finally got there, and it all was good.
So we know that they seem to take different routes and there's different timings. Do they all end up in roughly the same location in Africa?
Yeah, so they do. They generally end up in the Congo Basin. They're all there. So the Democratic Republic of Congo, the Republic of Congo, sometimes a little bit lower down into Angola as well. But that's the area that they all arrive into. But yeah, the route there can be quite different. From some of the studies, they've shown that some birds take a more westerly route. They do go that sort of Iberia, and then round the west coast of Africa and down through that way, whereas the vast majority seem to go the eastern route. So going across, down through Italy, across to, through Libya and Sudan, down that way to the Congo. So it's, two different sort of ways of running to get south. And they've shown, certainly in the UK, that the Scottish and Welsh birds all go the eastern route. And those particular populations are doing well.
Okay.
Whereas the English birds do a mixture of both, and they're the ones which are declining. So they do a mixture of going west and east, and there's a big decline going on there in England. So they're thinking that the western route is a lot harsher, a lot harder route for them to take. And so if you've got lots of birds going that route, it's difficult. It makes life a lot difficult for them.
It's early days and only three have been tracked so far, but it seems that at least some Irish cuckoos do go through that eastern Mediterranean route down through the Balkans, through Greece and into North Africa from there.
That's right, yeah. So go that completely, sort of opposite end of Europe, go from one end of Europe to the other end of Europe, down through, so Libya, Egypt, and down through Sudan, and then eventually down. Now, what is quite interesting is that they all come back the same route. Okay. But not the route they went. They all go back the western route. So what they do is that once they've been down in Africa for about 4 months, so they actually spend more time in the Congo Basin than anywhere else. They're there for 4 months. They come along to sort of the sort of Guinea Forest area. So the sort of southwest Africa, the western African, just the southern bit along the bottom there, sort of Ivory Coast, Ghana. And they do another feed up there before then going across the Sahara, going back north.
It really is amazing the kind of movements that they can make. And when they decide to move, they can move very quickly.
That's right. That's it. And they literally just go. It's non-stop. They're fly, 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 non-stop go. There's no, take a break here or just hover or use thermals or anything like that, like some species do. They're literally wing beating all the way.
So those three Killarney cuckoos, did they make it back to Ireland?
Well, two have so far. We're still waiting on the third. The third was in central France, but KP and Torque, they made it back. And really amazing, actually. One thing that was one of the first things that made it sort of slightly different from what happens with the British cuckoos is that we had a sea crossing. So KP decided when he got to northern Spain to go directly across the Bay of Biscay on, you know, part of the Atlantic Ocean and go straight to Ireland, which has never been seen by any of the other European cuckoos that have been tagged.
I'm wondering, Niall, how long did it take it to get across from Iberia into Ireland, crossing the Bay of Biscay? I'd also love to know, because we've had a lot of northerly winds in the last while, were the birds stalled due to those sort of northerly winds? Were they stalled down maybe in Spain for a little while?
That's a very good question, Eric. Sam, what do you think?
Yeah, so it was really quite interesting watching it go, because we were sort of a bit taken back by it, to be honest. But it was very, very quick. And as you say, those northerly winds, you could actually see on some of the track that it did seem to have a little bit of effect. Some bits it went really fast, and then other bits it went a lot slower. But it only took about 2 days to do that crossing. It was just vroom, straight across, just a bit over 2 days to do that crossing. It ended up landing in Ireland, not far from Fermoy, in Cork, spent the night there, and then straight across into Killarney.
To the same spot where you tagged it?
Exactly the same spot that we tagged it, that's right. And the second cuckoo that came back, he went slightly different route, stopped off. He still did the sea crossing, but stopped off in Brittany. So obviously had a little break there. And then it went straight from Brittany, straight into Killarney. Again, straight back to the same location.
Eric, it's amazing to know this about our cuckoos finally, isn't it?
It's unbelievable. Technology has allowed us, you know, an insight to the movements of these birds, you know, to think that in autumn they sort of go east, and then they, in spring, of course, in spring they have a determination to get north, to get into the breeding grounds. They're, like most birds that are migrating in spring, are migrating with a purpose. But to see those sort of subtleties, and I wouldn't have imagined that cuckoo would have been able to fly for 2 days non-stop, out at sea. That's a total revelation to me.
It just shows as well, Eric, doesn't it, how fragile their lives must be, because there's so many variables that their survival depends upon. And if you take one of those things out of the equation, or something is messed up with the timing, or climate change removes the food source at a key stage in migration, they're scuppered.
That's the whole point. Anything minor that looks minor can have a big impact. And they only live several years. If we fail to get them coming back year on year, you know, the species is gone from Ireland, which is, you know, it's frightening. So every piece of that journey is really useful to understand. The wintering grounds in the Congo, whatever, if there's a problem there, the birds don't survive. So, yeah, a great insight.
Anyway, Niall and Sam, thank you very much indeed. That's Niall Hatch and Sam Bailey from the National Parks and Wildlife Service. And you can find out more details by visiting our website, rte.ie/Mooney.